Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 27th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Chris Neamey and Judith Mitchell of the League of Women Voters will tell us about a workshop on lobbying effectively. Ariel Rolfe and Andrew Washburn will update us on the Cape Decision Lighthouse Society activities. Becca Gay-Geen will tell us about AWARE advocacy training. And we'll hear from K2 President and General Manager Bill Legere about this week's Giving Back the Airwaves membership drive. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 39 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Hours before the Trump administration issued permits to resurrect the Keystone XL pipeline Friday, a group on the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana set out on a prayer walk. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio has more.
Marina Starr woke with the sun Friday morning near Big Muddy Creek on the eastern edge of the reservation.
It's a beautiful day out. Beautiful day for walking.
Starr is one of the organizers of the continuous three-day prayer walk. She and more than a dozen other tribal members and veterans traversed nearly 100 miles across the reservation, ending Sunday evening at Porcupine Creek on the western side of the reservation. Starr says the prayer walk was to raise awareness about the potential dangers of the pipeline, which will carry crude oil from tar sands production sites in Canada to refineries on the Gulf Coast. Extracting tar sands oil emits 17% more greenhouse gases than standard crude oil extraction, and environmentalists worry a breach in the 36-inch pipeline could contaminate drinking water sources.
We want to protect our water treatment plant that we have in between Poplar and Wolf Point. It serves the entire Fort Peck Indian Reservation and off the reservation in northeast Montana.
The Water Board Commission of the Fort Peck Tribes and farmers near the Yellowstone River also voiced opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline Friday, while the Montana Chamber of Commerce, Montana Petroleum Association, and 26 Montana legislators came out in support of the pipeline. A spokesperson for the Montana Petroleum Association said the Keystone XL pipeline will create 1,500 temporary construction jobs and 15 permanent positions in Montana. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
The U.S. Department of Justice recently confirmed it will not bring criminal charges against any of the federal employees involved in the 2015 Gold King Mine waste spill. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, Republican Senator John McCain wants to know why.
Senator McCain is demanding to review the findings of an investigation launched last year by the DOJ and the Environmental Protection Agency. He says there's evidence employees may have violated the Clean Water Act and other federal laws in causing the spill. The senator says if a private business had triggered the accident, the EPA would be moving aggressively to put that company's employees in jail. The 3-million-gallon mine waste spill fouled southwestern waterways, including the San Juan River, and devastated several farming communities on the Navajo Nation. The tribe is suing the EPA for damages, but the agency says it's taken responsibility. A recent estimate put the economic impact of the spill at more than $330 million. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Tribal college students from across the country showed off their skills in both academic and athletic competitions last week in Rapid City, South Dakota. Native higher education students gather annually for training and to display their achievements, as Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
The American Indian Higher Education Consortium, or AHEC, is comprised of 37 schools, and students came to participate in events like hand games, science bowl, basketball, art, and film. Isaiah St. Cyr from Little Priest Tribal College in Nebraska took home the hand games championship for their school.
We felt pretty proud. It wasn't easy. Had to just play smart. And it was very stressful, trying to decide who's going to do what, who will be hiding or guessing.
Nueta Hidatsa Sahanish President Twyla Baker Demaray says she enjoys this time of year.
We did really good in the science competitions and the academic competitions, so I was really pleased. It was a lot of fun.
The site for the 2018 AHEC conference will be in Bismarck, North Dakota. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. You can tell President Trump to honor tribes and protect Bears Ears at protectbearsears.org.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 27th, 2017. I'm your host today, Scott Burton. On the show now are Chris Neamey, she's the president of the League of Women Voters, and also Judith Mitchell, who is the secretary of the group. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. So I guess we're going to focus on a lobbying effectively workshop this Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay. And that's from 9 to noon this Saturday morning, the Terry Miller Building. What are you going to cover there, Chris?
We're going to give an overview on government and how a person can advocate for their cause when they go to see their legislator. We're going to give some basic information on how they can navigate on computers into the government website so that they can find bills of interest to them. And then they're going to have some hands-on activities on how to testify before a committee, if they so choose, or what to do if they go in to see a legislator, because they only have 15 minutes typically when they go to see a legislator, and you really have to be organized in what you say to get your message across. When you testify before a committee, you typically have 1 to 2 minutes, so you really, again, have to be organized, and we'll give them some tips on how they can do that.
Excellent. I want to get back to the importance of lobbying and talk about that. But before we do that, Judith, can you start us out, give us a little background on the League of Women Voters here in Juneau?
I'm sure. We've been in Juneau since 1964, and there's four leagues established in Alaska right now, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Kenai-Soldotna. And Juneau is the largest, by far, organization across the state. So we're affiliated with the National League of Women Voters as well, and our membership includes men and women. We're glad to work with people. We're a nonpartisan organization, so we really encourage citizen education and advocacy on matters that are specifically central to Juneau.
Okay, Chris, I think about all the volunteer opportunities we have in Juneau, lots of things that we can do as individuals. What is it for you that drew you to the League of Women Voters? Why is this important?
Well, I just feel that it's really important that we have a voice in our government. And so the best way you can do that is to find out about what's going on, to become an informed citizen, and then to speak to the legislators or to the assembly on the local level. So depending on, you know, what your interests are, whether they're at the local level or at the state level, there's really a lot of, you know, room to get involved.
How about you, Judith?
I was going to say we're really lucky to have the legislature here in town. We do a group activity with the Capital Kids, Capital Visits, in January, and we bring all of the eighth graders in Juneau to the Capitol. We do that over the span of about 5-6 days. But our legislators are so approachable, and they're and we can get in touch with them. The eighth graders get really involved and engaged in testifying and in meeting the legislators and in watching the sessions. So it's a great opportunity to be involved in something in Juneau and to really make a difference.
Okay. Chris, you want to get back to lobbying? Tell us, where does this fall into the picture of communicating with our legislators?
Well, often people think that a lobbyist is somebody who's a paid person and represents maybe a business. But that's not really all that is involved with lobbying. Those of us who care about our public schools or what's going on maybe with the state budget, we all have ideas on, you know, what we'd like to see. And so if we become knowledgeable about the issues involved with the schools, with our state budget, we find out more information on that, we can go talk to our legislators or the assembly.
We can all be lobbyists.
We can all be lobbyists in that sense, yes.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that when you do go visit a legislator, you have 15 minutes.
That's typically what they schedule us for.
So you need to have a well-sculpted presentation, I bet.
That's right. That's right. So you really have to decide what's important to you, what the issue is, or if you have a concern, you need to be really upfront about that. I like to prepare something on like a little index card because that shows me that I only have just a very small amount of time to present that information. And then, of course, your assembly person or your legislator always likes it if you have a suggestion on how to solve it if it's a problem, too.
These are just some of the things I know you'll cover this Saturday morning. It's April 1st, April Fool's Day, from 9 a.m. to noon. Did you also mention that the Legislative Information Office will be there?
Yes, we have Charles Westmoreland with the Legislative Information Office, and he is going to be doing the part on the Alaska legislative government and how to navigate what's called the basis system to get in to see what bills are before the legislature, how to track bills, how to see the content of the bills, and actually to see where it is in the process, if it's been, you know, if it's sent on to what committees, what committee status is it. You know,
right.
What
That's
committee is
one
it
of the things that the League does is that we send out advocacy reports all throughout the legislative session with mm-hmm. the bill numbers, with the issues that are out there, and with information on there. So if you're on our emailing list, we send that out to our members every month and make sure that they know what's going on and they know the bill number and who to contact and what legislators are involved.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but let's say you're pro-education and you go in, but there's no education bills before the legislator at that time. Maybe that's not the best time to go and communicate that. But if you know what's on their plate, what's on their radar, mm-hmm. is that true?
Mm-hmm. That okay. would be true, yes.
Okay. Hands-on activities I see on your flyer.
Right. Well, with that, we're going to offer a few bills, and the person will be able to choose either one of the ones that we're offering. They can decide whether – we don't tell them how to respond. They will either be maybe for it or against it, or if they are following the legislature and have their own bill that they want to talk about. We're going to have a committee, kind of a mock-up of a committee. And then they'll get a chance to testify before the committee.
That sounds like fun. And this is all free, right?
Yes.
Oh, it's all free, yes.
All right. Again, this is in the Terry Miller Building, the old Capitol School, right?
Yes.
Behind the Capitol Building. It's Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. This looks great. If people want more information, where should they go?
To the Juno League website, it's junolwv.org. We're on Facebook, so look for Juno LWV on Facebook or on Twitter, so we'll have all of that information out there.
Okay. Is there anything that we're missing, you two? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, we'll have a little bit of breakfast in the morning, and you don't have to sign up. Just show up, and walk-ins are welcome.
All right. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Chris Neamey and Judith Mitchell of the League of Women Voters. This workshop on how to lobby effectively is this Saturday from April 1st from 9 a.m. to noon at the Terry Miller Building. Thanks very much, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Capital City Skyline Photo. Skyscrapers shine, the sun so low in the sky. The secretary's at the hot dog vendors, calves honk at the back. gentle messengers rolling by.
I don't have those driveway moments. I don't have a driveway, but that's, I have like trailhead moments. My name is Andrew Washburn. I'm the museum registrar for the Alaska State Museum. I'm also the secretary for the Cape Decision Lighthouse Society. I've lived in Juneau for 3 years. I listen to public media, and I read public media. I value public media. I trust K2's local coverage because it's truly objective, and you could say that for NPR across the board. Commercial media offers opinions and coverage based on who pays their bills. And, you know, I guess in the same way public media does that too, you know, and we pay their bills. And so they're going to offer coverage, you know, that speaks to us, that we want to hear, which I'm hoping is the rest of you want objective coverage too.
Please take a moment to begin, renew, or upgrade your membership now at ktoo.org. You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 27th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, 20 minutes past the top of the hour. And you just heard his voice. He's in the studio now, Andrew Washburn. He's the secretary of the Cape Decision Lighthouse Society. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here.
And thanks for recording that testimonial us.
You bet.
All right. And also Ariel Rolfe. She's on the board of the Cape Decision Lighthouse Society. Thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So you have a fundraiser / awareness recruiting party coming up this Sunday. Looks like a lot of fun. At the New Narrows Bar, downtown Juneau.
That's right. So it opens Friday, the bar does, and we have a party, private party going on Sunday that everyone's welcome to, but you have to buy tickets either in advance or at the door. And so this will be the New Narrows Bar. We had a sneak peek this last weekend, and it's beautiful inside. There's a fireplace, and it looks completely different than what you would have remembered the space to be.
Okay. And, of course, this is for the Cape Decision Lighthouse. Andrew, you've been involved with the Cape Decision Lighthouse for a long time. How did that come to be? How did you discover that place?
Oh, wow. Well, I didn't discover it. I think there, you know, people have been there for at least 30,000 years or so. But I got involved in, I think it was 2005, when a buddy of mine down in Washington, who formerly lived in Sitka, had been involved with the lighthouse from the very beginning of the nonprofit of the society, invited me up to go on a work party, and I've been going almost every year since then. It's in a really remote spot, so we generally get only a handful of trips out there a year. It's about as remote as you can get in the Southeast.
Describe that for us.
It's on Kuyu Island, which is, I don't know, it's one of the large islands in the Alexander Archipelago. But it's on the very southern tip, so it's sort of between Baranoff Island and Prince of Wales. And it kind of sticks its nose out into the Gulf of Alaska, and right on that nose is the lighthouse, which was built in 1932. It was the last lighthouse built in Alaska. And I guess I should say the last manned lighthouse, and which probably puts it up there in the last manned lighthouse built in the United States.
I think a lot of us know historically how important lighthouses were. Are they still that functional? I know they still have the lights, but I know there's a lot of sort of electronic navigational equipment in them now. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there is still a light at Cape Decision Lighthouse, and that is maintained by the Coast Guard. So while the society owns the lighthouse and the property it sits on, the Coast Guard has a perpetual easement to come and service the light. In other places where there aren't people looking after the buildings, the Coast Guard will erect a separate light outside the building. But since we're keeping up the building, they keep it up in the cupola. And so the light shines from where it has since 1932.
Wow. Very cool. And can you describe the building for us? What's it like out there? What's it look like?
Well, it's I always tell people it's kind of a magical place because you have to go through such a journey just to get there that by the time you get there, it's like this really great, breathtaking moment when you see the lighthouse, just like you see it in paintings and pictures and everything. And then you get inside and, you know, I guess I don't know what I was expecting the first time I went out, but it's better than I was expecting, I should say, because I've been to a lot of cabins and remote places around Southeast, and it's always pretty rustic. And the lighthouse is rustic, but it's also they've put so much work into it ever since it's become a nonprofit society. And so it's really a cozy and comfortable, mostly comfortable place, and has a lot of work to go, but it's, you know, in a good place right now.
Can you give us a few highlights of some of the stuff that you've done as the society over the years?
I think one of the biggest projects and the one that I think has the most impact on visitors, and Ariel mentioned that it is cozy. When I first went out there, it was not cozy. It was kind of like a cave. But we refinished the entire galley or kitchen and put in some modern appliances. And so and refinish the floors, so it's clean. It does not, it's not full of asbestos, and you know, we've got a warm wood stove, and I think that was one of the biggest impacts as far as making it a cozy place. The other, you know, a lot of the other projects are just small. I mean, it's just day to day. I mean, anybody who owns a home or or a boat in, you know, in the Tongass knows how much work that needs to go into keeping a building or a structure in good repair. And the lighthouse is a huge structure, a huge old structure that just needs constant maintenance, painting, masonry repair, that sort of thing.
Okay. And this Sunday, you'll be at the Narrows Bar from 6 to 9 p.m. What can people expect there?
Well, there's going to be lots of entertainment by board members and some light trivia. So bring your lighthouse knowledge. We'll also have a presentation sort of slideshow thing to demonstrate what kind of work goes on out there, the sites that you might see, and some of the volunteers who go out there. So it's mostly just to get to know everybody. We want Juno to know us, and we want to know Juno a little better.
Do you need volunteers?
Yeah, so another thing we would like to do is you know, talk to people about what it means to be a volunteer at Cape Decision, which it's not the easiest, like Ariel said, it's not the easiest place to get to. And then it's a tough, rugged place. It is kind of a lot like being at a cabin, you know, Forest Service cabin or a state cabin. It's just bigger, and the rocks are sharper, and, you know, the only way out, if something happens, is a helicopter, basically. And so we want to be able to communicate that to people firsthand before people sign up to be a volunteer. This year, we're hoping to do about a month of work parties out there for most of July and part of August. We'll be looking for people to come out and do, you know, all kinds of things from painting to carpentry to masonry repair, more painting, lots of painting.
Trail maintenance,
yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, having fun. And I guess this points to, you know, our main goal is to preserve the structure, but our secondary goal is to get the lighthouse into a place where it can be a platform for education and recreation. That's at the sort of core of our mission. And, you know, Ariel said it's a magical place, and I think everybody who I know has been there, you know, can't stop thinking about the lighthouse and wanting to be there. And I think sharing that with people is also really close to our heart, too.
Right.
Ariel, you mentioned that each of the board members will be providing entertainment on Sunday.
Except me.
Andrew, can we get a preview of your entertainment?
Oh, I signed up to do the trivia, so okay. I don't know what this other entertainment is. I think this is kind of a surprise to me. So.
Well, it's a little loose. Yeah. We have ideas. We had a lot of ideas of doing like a variety show, and I'm not sure what's going to stick.
All right, so. But it is at this new bar that used to be the Arctic Bar. It's now
right.
The Narrows, downtown
yeah.
Juneau,
yeah.
6 to 9. You're saying that the opening for the Narrows is actually on Friday. Does
right.
that sound
yeah.
right?
Yes, that's what I was told.
Said. Yeah, he's yeah. done a lot of work on that space. It's, I mean, I don't know. I don't want, you know, spoiler alert, but it's like the classiest place I've been in. Just, and it wasn't even finished in Juneau, I should say.
If people want to go, where can they get tickets?
They can go to our website online at www.capedecisionlight.org, or they can contact us, I guess, through email, capedecisionlight@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can buy them at the door.
I think I found you on Facebook pretty easy, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think messaging us through Facebook would be another great way if you
right.
can't, don't have the capacity to purchase online.
So it's tickets in advance, or you can get them at the door if there's still tickets left at 6
right.
p.m.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Ariel Rolfe, Andrew Washburn, thank you all for coming on the show. Anything we're missing? Anything you want to add?
I don't think
nope.
so.
All right. See you on Sunday.
All right. Thanks Scott.
If I'm not mistaken, it's been flames you. its spring member drive. But this year, KTOO is giving back the airwaves. We want to keep long fundraising moments out of the mix. You still get all the news and information you love from KTOO while we briefly remind you of the importance of your financial support. The largest single portion of KTOO's budget comes from individuals just like you who love the station and take pride in financially supporting it. Join with those who have already signed on this spring and help pay for the service you depend on. Just go to ktoo.org.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon. We're right at the bottom of the hour. And now on the show is Becca Gagin. She's a volunteer coordinator over at AWARE. Welcome to the show, Becca.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's nice to have you here. We're going to be talking about advocacy training that starts tomorrow night. But before we get into the details of that, tell us a little bit about AWARE.
Well, AWARE is a shelter in town that works with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault and their children. We are a shelter that not only houses people, but we also offer services to anyone in the community that needs it, despite their emergency situation or not.
Sure. I keep learning about more things that AWARE does.
We are getting bigger and bigger, and it's pretty exciting to see a lot of the programs that we've been launching lately.
Okay. So you're a volunteer coordinator. Tell us a little bit about what you do and who you coordinate.
I coordinate the volunteers. So anybody that's interested in volunteering, I just finally got an application embedded on the website, so it's really easy to apply. You don't have to get a hold of me first to get an application. You can just apply right online. Everyone that applies gets a background check run, obviously, because of the nature of our work. We have to be really careful about making sure that privacy is upheld and all that kind of stuff. And then we have a meet and greet and sort of show people around the shelter. I like to introduce people to other employees because that way the first time they show up, they're not a stranger. They know people. They can feel a little more comfortable.
What might be the most common thing that a volunteer does for AWARE?
We always need help with childcare, and we always, always need help with people prepping dinner, especially on the weekends. So
people who love kids and people who love to cook.
Yes.
You're wanted.
And even if you don't like to cook and you don't like kids, we will always find something for someone to do.
Okay. Or can you become an advocate?
You can. So our advocacy training is a lot of people, you know, we have full-time advocates, but a lot of times there's holes in the schedule. And so we have relief advocates, and it's technically paid, but, you know, it's a nonprofit. And so it's a lot of it is if you love the work. And advocacy training, it can be a really good way to wet your feet and kind of see what that might be like.
And this is a two-week training, did you say?
Correct. Yeah, this time we're trying something a little new slash a little old. This is how it used to be run. It's two different parts. The first part is more, I'm calling it learning your roots. So it's more looking at the systematic causes of domestic violence and sexual assault. It's open to the whole community. I think it's really just interesting information. It can be very eye-opening. It's sort of a feminism 101 course a little bit, with a domestic violence, sexual assault focus. And then the second week, and we're actually taking a break in between, and then the second week is very much getting into the nitty-gritty of what AWARE does, how to be an advocate for victims and survivors in Juneau, community resources, all that kind of thing.
Describe for us what an advocate might do. What's a day in the life of an advocate?
Oh,
I'm sure it's varied. But
it's very, yeah, it's busy, especially if you're working a day shift. You know, you might start the day answering a call from the ER, and you can go and work with a victim at the ER. You can help someone fill out a protective order that walks into shelter. You might just be sitting to somebody who's having a hard day, and you're just listening to them and supporting them.
Okay. Earlier we were talking about general volunteers like to cook, like kids. What kind of person have you found that is an effective advocate?
Someone who's an effective advocate is someone who is just a supportive person. Because a lot of times when you safety plan with somebody, what their safety plan is might not be, in your mind, something that's safe or something that you would do, and you still need to be able to support that person. So we always say support the person, not the plan. And so what I've heard is that you don't know that person's life. you don't know what safe is to them. So if that's what they want to do, then that's what you support. And so we try not to ever push people in any direction. We just give them options and try to help them, connect them with community resources as best that we can.
Okay. So the training starts tomorrow night, is that right?
Correct, yes. The first week we're actually going to be doing it at the Mendenhall Library so that we have a little bit bigger of a space, since we're hoping that lots of people are going to sign up. And we have a pretty good group so far, but there's always room because that library space is pretty big. If anybody wants to sign up, they can get a hold of me at AWARE. You can either call, which is 586-6623, and someone will send you to me, or you can email me at BeccaG@AwareAK.org. That's BeccaG@AwareAK.org.
Okay. And so this week's classes, for example, are Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, right?
Correct, yes. And then we're taking a week off, and then it's Monday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
And I only got part of the hours, but you said, like, tomorrow, for example, is 5 to 8.
Yes.
And then what's Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday like?
Thursday is 5 to 8. Saturday is 10 to 6. That's our longest day because we're working with the library hours. And then Sunday is noon to 5. And all of that information is also on our website, which is awareak.org.
And I bet if somebody wasn't sure if this is the right path for them, they could call you and talk to you about
it. Most definitely, yes.
And again, your number is 586-6623.
Correct.
All right. Becca Gay-Geen has been talking about AWARE advocacy training that starts tomorrow night. She's the volunteer coordinator for AWARE. Becca, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Just that I think that this training isn't necessarily just for people that want to be advocates. It's just, it's interesting, and I think it's important knowledge to have to know how to help anyone in our community.
Is there a cost for getting the training?
There's a suggested donation of $25 to help cover costs, but we never, ever let money bar anybody from taking our trainings.
Okay. Becca, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 27th of March, 2017. It's the birthday of the French novelist Henri Murger, born in Paris, 1822, famous for his book Scènes de la vie bohème, a fictionalized account of his own experiences as an impoverished writer living in the Latin Quarter, Paris's left bank. It became the basis for Puccini's opera La Bohème, the character of Rudolfo, based on Murger himself. It's the birthday of Patti Smith Hill, born in Anchorage, Kentucky, 1868, a kindergarten teacher. It was she who wrote Happy Birthday to You, and her sister Mildred wrote the melody. It's the birthday of the novelist and poet Julia Alvarez, born New York City, 1950, grew up in the Dominican Republic, came back to New York when she was 10 years old. Her first novel was based on her experience about coming back to New York, how the Garcia girls lost their accents. She also wrote a nonfiction book, Once Upon a Quinceañera, about the tradition of throwing elaborate 15th birthday parties for young Latinas. And it was on this day in 1912, the wife of President William Howard Taft and the wife of the Japanese ambassador planted the first of the cherry trees in Washington, D.C., around the Tidal Basin. And today is the birthday of the poet Louis Simpson, born Kingston, Jamaica, 1923, moved to New York City as a teenager. He served as a combat infantryman in some of the most intense fighting of World War II in Normandy and Arnhem, the Battle of the Bulge. Returned home suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, spent 6 months in a psychiatric hospital. His first book of poems, The Aravistes, published just a few years later. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry. The old man is in the last days of work he has done and loved for many years. He is mowing with his old team, the white horse and the black, on the open hillside, under the open sky, within the surrounding woods. This work once was known by many of his kind, and he is one of the last to know it. But now, as his time grows scarce, his work rarer by the day, its sights and motions could be filmed, its sounds recorded, it could be preserved, perhaps forever, by wonders of modern technology. He says no. He thinks no. He refuses, with his whole heart, the already futile wish to make of a past present a future past. Being so saved, his days would be lost, would be no longer even a memory. He needs these last of his work days. He needs them to be his last, his own, such days as do not come to one unwilling to let them go. Had he been unwilling for them to go, they would not yet have come. Had he not been glad to be the only one to know them, he would never have known them. If he remembers them to the last, giving his thanks, how great will be his reward. A poem by Wendell Berry from A Small Porch, published by Counterpoint and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, I'm Lakshmi Singh, newscaster for NPR. Think of the major news events of the last 12 months. Election night, Donald Trump's inauguration, former President Barack Obama's farewell address, and then swiftly changing news since President Trump's first day in office. How often have you turned to public radio to keep up with these big events? NPR and 104.3 are committed to keeping you informed. To fulfill our commitment to you, we need your support, your financial support. Support the news you turn to KTOO for. Call now with your pledge of financial support.
So she said call, but we're not calling this year, are we,
right,
Bill?
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. Let's talk about why we're not calling 586-3636.
That's right. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 27th. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and in the studio now with me now is our president and general manager, Bill Legere. And it's day one of our 2017 spring membership drive. We're calling it Give Back the Airwaves.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. So we've decided rather than interrupting the programming all day long with endless, we call them pitching breaks, that we would just do these short spots like the one you just heard from Lakshmi Singh. And I didn't know she gave the phone number because we're not actually using phones during this membership campaign. It's all right if somebody wants to call our offices at our main number. We take your gift that way. But we're encouraging people quietly to go online at ktoo.org. And we're calling it Give Back the Airwaves because we just want to give back that time that we used to take out of a whole week in the spring and a whole week in the fall. And this is an experiment, Scott, to find out if we can raise the money we need to run KTOO more effectively and more efficiently and without interrupting programming and without the relentless, some people call it begging, and the ringing phones and all of the all of the hoopla that goes along with a real full-blown member drive.
And I've heard that this is a few other stations have tried this with success.
Yeah, this is a mini trend happening around the country that stations big and small are trying to find different ways to do membership campaigns without taking so many minutes out of each hour, so many hours out of every day. And I think it's more important now because, you know, the news is arguably more important than ever. And it's really hard in this immense flow of information that we're getting to pull back on that at all and to interrupt it, both on the state level and on the national and the global level. So we would feel good if we could come up with a model that doesn't take away from the listening experience, but contributes to it. So that's why you're hearing all of these short spots, some of them recorded by people here in the community, others from our friends at NPR.
All right. Well, let's hope it works. We'll be with our listeners just very shortly, right, with these short spots through
mm-hmm.
Friday.
And this, by the way, is not a pitch right now.
Nope.
This is just an interview, Scott.
An explainer.
Yeah.
Bill, you've been with K2 since 1985.
Right. I came here as a young guy from fresh off a job as the news director of KFSK in Petersburg. I moved there thinking I'd be in Alaska for a couple of years and it'd be kind of fun. I remember the station offered me $15,000 and $100 in moving expenses to relocate there. And so I was the news director and then the manager. And then this opened up, and KTO was the mecca for public radio in Alaska. It was the source of all the energy and the lifeblood, and it had inspired and led the way for so many other stations that it was a thrill for me to come here because it had such a tremendous reputation as one of the first stations and also probably the first in Alaska to have true community roots.
And did you come as news director here or
no,
general manager?
No, as radio manager.
Okay.
Yep. And then I clawed my way up the ladder and took the job as general manager in 1991.
Paint a picture for us of K2 in 1985.
Sure. Well, we were in the old Assembly of God Church building, which is where Rainbow Foods is now located, a block down the street from the Capitol on 4th Street. And the radio station studios were in the basement, and the TV station studio is in the church sanctuary, and the control rooms in the old choir loft. And kind of a funky building, but a great location. You know, we loved it there, but we outgrew it. And in those days, it was one channel. It was KTOO only. And we were on the air 18 hours a day, signed off at midnight and signed on at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Morning Edition didn't fill every hour. We carried segments of it, but there was music programming in there. And so it was a real mix. It was kind of an eclectic community radio sound with a mix of volunteer-hosted music programs. And kind of the new network had appeared in the past few years, NPR. You know, it was, I've often described it as something in the DNA is, it's a kind of a little, you know, they didn't call people nerds in those days, but it was like started by nerds, by geeks who could figure out the technology to do something on a shoestring and kind of patch it together, and they were thrilled with the results. And I think that part of KTO has always been in the DNA here, that still to this day, if we can figure out how to improve communication through some geeky technological application, everybody's happy.
When did K2 TV start? And then when did KRNN and KXL
sure.
begin?
TV started in 1979 and started with a pile of state surplus equipment left over from the state legislature, and it was enough to parlay it into a TV station. And I wasn't around then, but I remember the story is that the there was no satellite dish, no satellite interconnection, and the tapes had to be shipped up, and they didn't arrive on time for the first day, October 1st, 1979. So they had a few programs on hand that they played over and over again. And at that point, KTO had moved into a building that was where the Court Plaza building is now, formerly known as the Spam Can. It was a little two-story wood frame building that had been a cigar factory and was big enough to have both the TV studio and the radio station. And that was before the move over to 4th Street. So that's one of four locations that KTO has occupied over the years. And then time goes on, and we started Gavel to Gavel, and we started 360 North as a statewide TV channel. And in 2007, 10 years ago, last month, 2 months ago, we started KRNN and KXLL. We were able to pick up two commercial FM radio stations and convert them into non-commercial public stations. And that was the so-called K3 project, which was the slogan was Public Radio to the Power of Three. And we were thrilled then to do something geeky again and figure out how to cram three radio stations into the space of one.
Thinking back to 1985 when you got here from Petersburg, did you ever imagine that Juno Public Media, K2 Public Media, would look like it does now and have the web element and everything that we do?
Oh, sure, no. You know, when I got here, we had one computer that everybody shared, and you signed up and took turns on it. And it was, you know, kind of you brought your floppy disk in and you got your half hour. But we were still using typewriters and making photocopies and putting memos in mailboxes. And email hadn't been envisioned, and certainly the kind of digital services that we do now hadn't been. So, but again, it was this constant reinventing spirit, I think, that was attractive to me and to many others. And even though, we couldn't have described what it would look like, I think there's always been a sense that KTO will grow and change with the community.
Okay. And here we are, giving back the airwaves. We'll be with our listeners very shortly, minimally.
Little tiny breaks. We have a goal of 160,000, Scott, and we're at 55,473 as of a few minutes ago, so well over a third of our way. We want to get there by the end of June, so we've given ourselves the rest of our fiscal year to reach that $160,000 goal, and I think this, I'm hoping this is going to be a success, but you heard me this morning. I did one minute long live break at 7:18, and the first thing out of my mouth was call 586-3636. It's just so ingrained that I could not fight it off. And then I went back on and I did it again. So I'm going to try better tomorrow. I'm going to be on with a live update for a minute tomorrow morning, and I'm going to do everything I can so I don't mention the phone number. Just talk about the website.
Tune in to Billiger tomorrow morning, 7:18.
It's
right?
my personal challenge. Yep. Yeah.
Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm always so grateful and amazed. I guess I shouldn't be amazed, but so grateful for the way this community supports KTLO and the arts and other nonprofits. It's just really a very special part of Juno.
Thank you, Bill.
When you make your contribution this spring, we invite you to come on down to the station to pick out your thank you gift. Our closets are overflowing with some of our favorite archival logo items, and we'd love for you to have them. We've got tons of t-shirts, mugs, zipper pulls, and pins, and a few other goodies. If it's not possible for you to come down, just let us know and we'll work something out for you. Renew or start your membership at ktoo.org.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get an update on the Juneau Community Board. Colette Costa will be here to highlight this week's Science on a Screen. Community member and STEM Coalition member Brenda Taylor will bring along a teacher to talk about science, technology, engineering, and math events and activities in Juneau schools. Let's take a look at the weather. It's currently 39 degrees at the Juneau International Airport. And the forecast for tonight calls for rain showers before 4 a.m., then rain and snow showers, lows around 35. Looking to tomorrow, snow possibly mixed with rain, becoming all rain after 10 a.m. Going into Wednesday, a chance of rain and snow before 10 a.m., then a chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 44. Thank you so much for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon.